You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to Real Talk number 13. I'm one of your hosts, Manny Manuel.
I'm Jordan Spires.
And I'm Mushy Mushhead.
Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. Unfortunately, Sam was unable to make it this week.
You mean?
But we had planned. Sorry?
Fortunately?
Fortunately. Fortunately for him.
I'm starting to think he doesn't want a podcast with me anymore.
I think he's scared, actually. The one thing we planned this for a while. The two of you had conspired to have an episode together, and
yes.
we finally have it. We finally have it. This is the fruits of your labor.
We made it. It's been a long road. It's been a long road, but we got here.
A little bit of juggling, but we made it work. Massive technical difficulties tonight, and we're only starting an hour and a half later than we originally planned.
It's gonna be fun,
but an hour and a half that we've gotten to spend together, so my heart is full.
That's true.
I got to.
You two got to giggle while I sweated, while I was sweating and was
wearing,
exactly. And I got to meet Mushy for the first time. Well, like as much as I can meet any of you guys at this point. It was good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very happy to have you both here. Let's get into the show. Big thank you to PFG Kyle Robertson for last week for coming in and recording Gattaca with me. Kyle and I had a lot of fun, and both episodes of Real Talk and Gattaca went a lot longer than they should have.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw Real Talk was 2.5 hours. I'm like, what did you guys even, when it started, like, what the hell are you guys even talking about?
Yeah, have you listened to the episode
yet?
Yeah,
I listened to the Real Talk. I haven't listened to Gattaca. I don't think Gattaca's out yet.
Okay, yeah, no, Gattaca comes out tomorrow. Yeah, I got really angry over a list that we went over.
You sure did. Shockingly, you got angry over a list.
I know, weird, right? So, yeah, that's the reason that episode went long, because I think that alone was about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you, Kyle. What's good? but let's get into it. We have a weekly question. I actually forgot to get one ready, so I quickly scrambled one. The day we're recording is March 27th. It is Quentin Tarantino's birthday today. So we decided to ask the weekly question, who is your favorite character from a Tarantino film? Jordan, who's your favorite character from a Quentin Tarantino film?
I'm kind of just going off the top of my head here a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm going with Lieutenant Aldo Raine from Inglourious Basterds.
That's kind of who I thought you were going to go with.
Ooh.
I had another one in mind. I thought maybe his antagonist in that film might have been your choice.
Close.
Lieutenant Aldo Raine is a delightful character.
Yes, he's just so much fun. It's one of my favorite Brad Pitt characters. He's clearly having a great time with it.
Gorlami. Actually, I also thought, let's go to Ashley. Do you even know who Quentin Tarantino is?
I know who he is, but like, I always get him confused. Is he an actor? Is he a director? Like, does he make movies? I can never remember exactly who he is. So I'm not gonna lie, I quickly Googled him so I could see what movies he did.
Yeah,
and I was right. He did Kill Bill, right?
He did do Kill Bill. Yes.
I really like Kill Bill, so I'm gonna say Uma Thurman. Is that the question?
So you're gonna go with the bride.
Yeah, Kill Bill. Whatever. I don't know.
I'm so glad that you're on a movie podcast.
My favorite.
Well, love when Mushy comes in. Don't pay attention to them.
I love when Mushy comes into the chat with just some god-awful movie that she loves so dearly, and Manny just can't help himself but shit on it profusely.
Story of my life.
Yeah. The Bride is actually somebody else I thought you might have picked, Jordan.
Fun fact that I still have not rectified. I still haven't seen Kill Bill.
Whoa.
I know. I don't have a reason why. Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 are the only Tarantinos I'm missing, and I haven't.
You've seen Death Proof as well?
Yes.
You've seen Death Proof and not Kill Bill?
Yep.
They're the only two that I've watched.
And together we make Quentin Tarantino's filmography.
There we go. I think I've seen Inglourious Basterds. Like, I'm probably like 85% sure. But yeah, I haven't seen any of the other ones.
I think Glorious Bastards is like Sam's number two or one of all time, isn't it?
No, it's his number one.
It's his number one.
No.
Yes, it is. I thought Goodwill. No. No, I can't remember.
I'm almost positive Inglourious is number one.
It's either one or two.
I agree. And I will get the answer right now.
He gave it a five.
It's number one. It's number one.
It is number one?
Okay, well, actually, here's a quick question. It's creeping in. What do you want us to do for episode 300?
Oh, gosh. I still can't. Every time you ask this, I have different answers.
Mushy knows what she wants, apparently. I saw the look on her face.
Honestly, I would love for you guys to review the movie 300. Because it would just be so... I love the movie, and by me loving it, I know that you guys would just shit on it the whole time.
I love it too, but I couldn't tell you much of like what actually happens in the movie. I just know that there's a lot of shirtless, beautiful men in that movie.
Yeah, and blood, that's all. And yeah. I think there's an oracle in there that, yeah.
Probably. Sure.
Yeah. Either that or like...
Probably not going to do that.
Or a live draft, I think, would be so much fun. Or have as many draft of us on the podcast as possible.
A live draft at 300 would be fun. I'd have to basically commit to that now.
Yeah.
See who can make it and all that.
Yeah.
And hope our schedules don't turn to shit in the meantime.
Yeah, well, I would just say this is the night we're doing it. Who's coming?
What episode is this?
This is 291.
Oh, okay, so we got 9 more to go.
That's absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
The exact date, as of right now, barring any cancellations, would be May 30th.
Oh, okay.
All right.
A live draft. Live draft for 300, hey? That would be kind of fun.
It would be fun, and we are thinking about it. It's been put into motion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if nobody shows up, then it's just a live draft between me and Sam.
It would still be good. I feel like I'd show up. If you give me that much notice, I put it in my calendar. No one will put anything else in there.
I'll talk to Sam.
All right.
I'll put it in my calendar and then get my calendar wrong and then have to cancel and reschedule. Multiple.
Just look at your calendar right now, Mushy. Are you free Thursday, May 30th?
But that's the problem. I look and I'm like, yeah, I'm totally free. And then it comes up where I'm like, fuck, I'm not free. What was I thinking? Was I looking at the right schedule? Okay, when is it? May what?
May 30th. Thursday, May 30th.
I mean, technically, I could make it work.
All right. I think we might have picked it.
I'm putting a block in the calendar right now.
Okay. All right. I'm going to talk to Sam this weekend.
I love it.
Because I'd like to give everybody as much notice as possible. And then I also have to pick a topic that can fit with either a lot of people or a few people.
True.
So everybody listening, mark May 30th. Just do it.
Yeah.
Thursday, May 30th, we're going to, I would say 90% sure, do a live draft.
I love it. That would be so much fun. It's so chaotic.
Wes, you're not allowed to come. I'm sorry. Just kidding.
The best The best part about that is I know Wes listens to these.
I know, that's why I said it.
Okay, my answer for my favorite character from a Tarantino film is probably pretty easily Jules Winfield from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I saw that coming. Yeah. Have you not seen Pulp Fiction?
No, I don't know what he's talking about.
How have you not made her watch it?
I refuse.
Because I know that she won't like it.
Mm. That's fair.
Or I shouldn't say, I bet you she'll probably give it like a 3. It just won't it just won't have the impact.
That's true. That's fair.
And and the non-linear story the non-linear storytelling is going to fuck her up.
The what?
The story's not told in order.
Oh fuck. That'd be so annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no memento then either.
Yeah.
Have to pay attention? Ugh, I hate those movies.
I had to yell at her for not paying attention when we watched Last Mohicans. Which you didn't log on Letterboxd, by the way.
I didn't?
No, because I've been waiting to see what you were going to rate it to see how sad I was going to get.
I totally thought I did. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll go do that right now.
Okay.
You guys keep talking.
We'll talk because this next part has to deal with actual movie knowledge, so you don't need to be involved.
Perfect.
All right. So we're going to do the In Memoriam. We had a character actor pass away, Emmett Walsh. This is a part of the podcast where we just like to pay tribute to those that have fallen, that have contributed to the art form that most of us love and adore. So for me, Emmett Walsh, he's got a lot of really small roles, usually not very big. But he's always kind of noticeable, or he's very enjoyable. For me, had a small role in a movie called A Time to Kill. Jordan, did you end up watching that? Matthew McConaughey, Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I watched this for the 96 year. I loved this.
Yeah. So he was the psychiatrist that Matthew McConaughey brought into the trial. So he only had a couple scenes. He's really good in it. He played Dermot Mulroney's dad in My Best Friend's Wedding. And he had a small role in Blade Runner as well. I've always, even in his small roles, he has just this one tiny moment with Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding where she meets up with him at the baseball game and he sees her. And you can see, and this is a great actor, in a moment's notice on his face, you can see the history that they have together and that he knows that this woman is his son's best friend. And he treats her like he would treat any normal friend, with the exception of it's a female, so they have a little bit more physical intimacy. It's a very quick passing moment, but he nails it. And it's just actors like this that just add so much background and so much depth to your films. And he's been in a whole bunch of other ones that a lot of other people love, but I just wanted to pay tribute to him. And Jordan has a little bit of history with him as well.
Yeah. Going through his filmography, it was funny when I asked you about the In Memoriam this week, you said who it was. The name didn't ring a bell, but the second I saw his face, I was like, oh shit, I didn't even know this man died. That's very sad. He has a very recognizable face. So I have a very interesting history with this man. I very vividly remembered him as the grouchy neighbor in Christmas with the Cranks. Yes.
Am I supposed to talk?
You're allowed to talk.
I thought I'd be quiet. I loved him in Christmas with the Cranks.
I also recently watched My Best Friend's Wedding for the first time. And the scene that Manny said, it is a really sweet scene. He was the apothecary in Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, which is one of my favorite Shakespeare adaptations. But one of my favorite roles of his was as the voice of the fisherman in The Iron Giant, which is one of my all-time favorite animated movies. Mushy's rolling her eyes, and I'm so mad that she doesn't like this movie. I don't understand how she doesn't like this movie. It baffled me when you watched it and gave it, like a 2?
Yeah.
That hurt me so bad. You gave it a 2?
Sorry. I'm so sorry. It's not that I didn't like it. It just wasn't my favorite. That's all.
Give it a 2.
I was really bored. I'm so sorry. My daughter loved it.
Well, yeah, it's a good movie.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's kind of my main history with them. Also, in Blade Runner, Captain Bryant was another one I wanted to to mention quickly. It's a movie I typically enjoy. So, yeah.
Mushy, do you have any thoughts on M. Emmett Walsh before we bid him farewell?
No, like, same with Jordan. I didn't recognize the name, but as soon as I looked him up, I was like, oh my gosh, he's been in so many different things. So it was very sad. I really enjoyed his characters in My Best Friend's Wedding and Christmas with a Crane, because I just think he has such a quirky face expression, like the emotions that he emits through his face. So it was very sad to see that he had passed.
So thank you so much, Emmett, for everything you did for movies and for cinema. We truly appreciate it, and your legacy will live on forever because of the art form that you participated in. Let's move into what we've been watching. Jordan, you had a couple films you'd like to discuss. Fire away.
Yes. So the first movie that I wanted to mention is one I saw it a couple weeks ago. It's a 2024 release. It has skyrocketed to not the exact very top of my list, but it's going to probably stay pretty high at the top of my 2024 list. And that is Love Lies Bleeding. Yes. So the synopsis, reclusive gym manager Lou falls hard for Jackie, an ambitious bodybuilder headed through town to Las Vegas in pursuit of her dream. But their love ignites violence, pulling them deep into the web of Lou's criminal family. So when I went into this, I didn't know a lot about it. What I knew about it was that it was gay and that it was starring Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien. I know that Kristen Stewart is not very loved in our particular movie circle. In the queer community, she's very... Oh, well, thank you, Mushy. I know Manny doesn't like K-Stew. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, her time in Twilight was not her favorite time. She dealt with a lot of shit at that point. And I think since she's been able to be more of herself, she's like, I'm obsessed with her. I think she's wonderful. And I love who kind of she's been able to become after her Twilight years. And then also Katie O'Brien, fucking stunning human being. I'm in love with her too. But I didn't know what the plot or anything of this was. I just went in pretty well blind. I didn't want to watch any trailers. This movie is probably one of the most absurd movies I've seen in a very, very, very long time. One thing I really loved about this is that it's not like a movie that focuses so much on queerness as a plot point. It's a terrifying horror crime movie where the people just happen to be queer, which is something that we don't get a lot of, and slowly but surely the genres are changing to be a little bit more inclusive, which is great. I had an absolute blast with this. If you watch this with the right people, you're going to have a really good time. I watched it with the right people. The theater was actually a lot more full than I was expecting it to be, which made for a lot of the random awful shit that happened. Getting that big reaction from everybody else was so much fun. One thing I want to say about this movie is that I do not blanket recommend this movie. I know there are people who are not going to like where this movie goes, how this movie ends, what happens. It's for, like, Manny, I love you. I almost don't want you to watch this movie. I almost don't want to hear your thoughts on this movie. Like, I've been enjoying, Wes watched it a little while ago, and we've been talking about it a bunch. Because he's had a lot of theories about it, and he really enjoyed it, and we've been talking about it a lot, and it's been a lot of fun. I don't see this as a movie that Manny would enjoy. I also don't necessarily know that this is a movie Mushy would enjoy either. I think it's got a bit of a niche following is all. But I absolutely adored it. I'm excited to watch it again. And I mean, we're only in March, and I've now given 2 fives for 2024 movies, and I've only watched like 5 of them. Yeah. This was a 5. This
is handing out 5s?
The 4 Horror is handing out 5s.
Crazy.
Absolutely incredible.
Come up with a new nickname for 2024.
I actually don't think I've given out a 4 yet in 2024 releases, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, that was the first movie I watched. Very excited. Yeah, I don't expect either of you will watch it anytime soon. And if you do, maybe don't tell me about it. The next movie I wanted to talk about is, so yesterday Kyle in the chat posted that it was the 20-year I was waiting for that. That it was the 20-year anniversary of Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed.
Oh, that's right.
And so while I was writing up my notes for the movie we're going to review later, I thought it would be fun to do a doubleheader of watching the OG live action Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed. These movies were my childhood. I was a Scooby-Doo kid my entire life. When I was like 3 years old, I was a Blue's Clues kid when it was on Treehouse. And then I graduated from Blue's Clues to Scooby-Doo on Teletoon, and Scooby-Doo's had my heart ever since. It is easily one of my favorite shows as a kid. And these movies, watching them back, I couldn't believe how much like nostalgia it brought back, but also how much I remembered of these movies as they were happening. These movies have a banging soundtrack, both of them. They have some fantastic musical moments in them. The acting is so bad that it's good. Like Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar, Matthew Lillard, like just they're absolutely terrible, but they're terrible in the way that this movie needs them to be for it to be enjoyable. It's also fun watching them as an adult, because a lot of the jokes that go over your head as a kid now make sense. A lot of the weed jokes make much more sense now than they did when I was 5 years old. These movies just make my heart absolutely so happy. I was 1,000% the target audience for this, still am. And I think a lot of the kids who watched this when they were kids, who are now adults, all love it. And when I say that, I'm talking me, Kyle, Wes, I'm pretty sure still loves these movies. They're honestly such a good time. And I was honestly kind of shocked. I was looking up its Wikipedia afterwards. The first one made $275 million worldwide. That's pretty good. In 2002? Solid. I don't know if I ironically gave it a 5 out of 5 or if I unironically gave it a 5 out of 5, but it is sitting at a 5 on my letterbox at the moment.
So just out of curiosity, it's Scooby-Doo 2 that you gave a 5 to.
No, the first one. The second one got a 4 because in the first one, there's not as much usage of CGI. The second one has a lot more usage of CGI, and it's bad. It took me out a little bit.
Which one are they on the tropical island?
First one.
Okay, I like the first one.
Yeah, it's a good time. Have you seen these, Manny?
I've seen the first one. I remember next to nothing about it. I remember being upset that I watched it. I remember thinking it was a complete waste of time.
Fair enough.
Now, I'm sorry, you said that was 2002. Is that correct?
Yeah, the first one came out in 2002. I was 6 years old.
Okay, so 2002, I'm 27 years old, and this was kind of also – well, no, not even kind of. This is the height of Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar, and, well, Matthew Lillard's actually on his way down.
Yeah.
I was kind of sick of them. Freddie Prinze is not a good actor. Sarah Michelle Gellar is – Mushy, what's going on?
You can speak.
You're playing charades and you're bad at it.
I was just going to say, move the microphone closer to your mouth.
It's right by my mouth.
Oh, okay. Well, I sounded a little like you were far away.
Okay. I was like, I don't know what game you're playing.
I couldn't figure it out either.
Yeah.
You're like eating your phone. I'm like, I'm confused.
When we play charades, Mushy is not on my team. I have almost no recollection of anything that happened in the first movie, but I do remember not liking it. We will not be covering that movie when we get to that year.
That's what, oh, that was, that's what you think.
No, I know it'll be covered. It'll be a lot of fun to tear your guys' childhood apart. I look forward to it because I'll finally get my revenge for all the times you guys have been doing it to me.
I don't super often rip apart movies from your childhood.
I do.
I try not to.
I was just about to say, do you not remember Ford Fairlane?
Okay.
But in all honesty, Jordan, you were actually surprisingly kind to that movie.
I know.
I know. I was very happy. Anyways. Okay. So Scooby-Doo gets a 5 and Scooby-Doo 2 gets a 4.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
Is that all of them?
Well, I kind of combined the Scooby-Doos because I didn't really talk about either of them specifically. It was just my Scooby-Doo night. And honestly, that was one of my favorites. Okay. It was such a fun night. The last movie I wanted to talk about was a 2023 release that I did not get to in time for any of my lists, any of the snubbies or anything. And it finally, I think Prime was having some rental deals. So this was only like $2.99 to rent. And so I was like, okay, it is time. I need to watch The Iron Claw.
Holy fuck.
Yes. So I won't go into spoilers or anything. Have you seen it, Mushy?
Mm-mm. No.
I'm going to try my best not to say anything too spoilery.
It's okay. I'll look
up. Fair enough. So the plot, let me try that again. This is the true story of the inseparable Von Erich brothers who made history in the intensely competitive world of professional wrestling in the early 1980s. Through tragedy and triumph, under the shadow of their domineering father and coach, the brothers seek larger-than-life immortality on the biggest stage in sports. So I, luckily, knew nothing about this family and this story going into this movie. When the movie came out, I wasn't even all that intrigued to watch it. The main reason why I wanted to watch it would have been for Jeremy Allen White, because I think he's an incredible actor. He's really good on a show I love called The Bear, and a show that I'm about to start, Shameless. So I really wanted to see him in a movie. Zac Efron's not one of my boys, but I'm not like ever mad to watch him in a movie that he's in. He's fine for me. I loved him when I was a teenager and High School Musical came out, and then it kind of died after that for me. And it wasn't until I started seeing some reviews and then I started seeing a lot of people crying over this movie that it got added to my watch list, because I love a movie that's going to destroy me, apparently. Those seem to be some of my favorites. I really wasn't expecting a movie about wrestling to really make me feel a lot of things. But this story is incredible. The movie is insanely well made. They cast it really well. The performances are really, really strong. And this is a movie that very heavily leans on the acting performances in order to get the right emotions out of you. And I really wasn't prepared for it, but it genuinely broke me by the end. There's some absolutely beautiful, incredibly well made scenes, including one.
I have goosebumps right now.
Hmm?
I have goosebumps right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one scene in particular that takes place on a pier with the brothers that was, I don't have a lot of words to describe it. And this movie kind of makes me sad that I hadn't seen this, at least before, even before the snubbies. I don't think this would have made my top 10 of 2023. I think it might be close, but I don't know if it would have. But I definitely could have slotted a few of these boys into some of the snubby categories. The only critique I really have of this movie, though, is Lily James is in it, and she's not given a lot to do. And she's kind of slotted herself into this weird, like, helpless housewife role. That I've seen her in a few too many times now. And I would really like for her to be given something a little bit more to do. But outside of that, it's a really well-crafted movie. I thought it was really well made. I think I would need to watch it again to give it a higher rating. Right now it's sitting at a 4. I think it could go up. I would need to watch it again, and I don't want to do that anytime soon.
Ironclaw finished at 25 for me. I originally gave it a 3 after finishing it, but it's a 4 now after kind of letting it really soak in. That Brothers on the Pier scene made my short list for the Sampas for the best scene of the year.
That was also partly why it kind of jumped up my watch list. I was listening to the Sampas and you mentioned that scene. I was like, shit, all right, I should just bite the bullet and watch this.
It's unbelievable.
It is.
And I wish we could get into it, but I would probably end up crying.
Yeah.
It is absolutely beautiful. Also, for me, I overlooked, when it came to Snubbies, but I really did overlook Holt McInerney as the father. Mm. Fritz von Erich, he's unfucking believable in this.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. Did you say it's Jeremy Allen White? Yeah. Is that right? Okay. He's pretty good in this movie. My only problem is that I grew up watching the Von Erichs, and he doesn't quite pull off Cary Von Erich the way I remember him. Outside of that, his performance is really good. So I really enjoyed the performance. I just had to kind of just separate it just a little from the actual Cary. Not a big complaint. I think the real reason the movie got a 3 for me the first time is the first time I watched it. Well, I've actually only watched it once, but my first watch through, I was really unimpressed with Zac Efron.
Oh.
And the more it sat with me, the more I realized that his portrayal of that character and the way that he acted made sense. But while watching it, I found it so bland.
That's fair.
And then as the movie started to kind of just really seep in and stuff, my impression and my opinion of his performance changed pretty dramatically. So yeah, it's a 4, but it was a 3 at the beginning, but I can see I have it as a 3, but it's surrounded by 4s all over my list there.
Yeah, even like looking at the letterbox skew of it, it is so right heavy. It's not even funny. It's wild.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, the more blind you go into the movie without looking into everything that happened with the Von Erichs, the better off you'll be. Yeah,
absolutely.
The less you know, so you can enjoy.
I totally agree.
When things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think knowing where the story was going would have like depreciated my enjoyment of it.
I can totally understand that. I knew everything that happened, and I still got a pretty good enjoyment. Especially like I said, that aforementioned scene, really fucked me up in a good way, in a very powerful and emotional way. Awesome. And so you gave it a 4, sorry?
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. I'm going to talk about, I originally had 3 planned, but I'm going to throw in a 4th here because it actually ties in perfectly. I watched a movie with one of my best friends recently called The Last of the Mohicans. 3 trappers protect the daughters of a British colonial in the midst of the French and Indian War. That is a shitty, shitty description of this film. Jordan, have you seen The Last of the Mohicans?
I watched it in high school for a social studies class.
Okay.
And I have not seen it since. And I can't say I remember a whole lot of it other than I do remember being kind of bored. But I was also 17 in social studies class, I think is an important context to add to that.
When we last did our top 20s, which would be about 3 or 4 years ago now, this sat around number 7 for me. This film is incredibly important to me. And my best friend came over to watch a movie with me, and we went through this, for me, very enjoyable game I play to help select the movie that we're going to watch that night.
Who's your best friend?
You silly bitch. And we settled on The Last Mohicans.
Yeah, it was really good. I felt honored to be able to watch this with you. I really did. Because I know how much it was for your life.
Yeah, it was really sweet. We got down to that. It was between that, Point Break, and something else. Can't remember.
Yeah.
But anyways, we chose that. Mushy, why don't you share your thoughts on The Last Mohicans?
You know I don't have thoughts. On anything. I really like the movie. It's beautiful, and especially having you like point out the different cinematography or whatever that you call it pieces during the movie was very helpful. I'm just pulling it up now. That one actor, what was he? The guy that, I can't do spoilers, right? What's his name? The brother. Who's the brother?
Uncas?
Yeah. That one shot of his face when the camera pans and it's all like dark in the background and then he's just highlighted. He looks so like warm and like the light is absolutely beautiful. A beautiful shot.
That was the beginning. Actor's name is Eric Schwieg, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Thank you. But yeah, like it was visually stunning. I love Daniel Day-Lewis. Growing up, I remember watching this movie when I was younger. I don't know if I watched it in high school or not, but I know that I did. I had seen it, but I didn't remember anything about it. So the premise of Daniel Day-Lewis playing the main character who is supposed to be Indigenous always rubs me the wrong way. Because I'm like,
but he's not Indigenous.
But yeah, and so it wasn't until I watched it with you where I was like, oh, he's adopted. Okay, that makes sense. So I had like, I appreciated the movie a little bit more because before I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder because of it. I'm like, why can't they just cast appropriately? But again, like, that's Hollywood. So I was glad to have been proven wrong on that point. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. There was a couple parts where I got a little bored, but that's very common for me in movies. So I think I started looking at my phone and got given the gears for it. But I didn't fall asleep, and I watched the whole thing, and it was beautiful, and I'm glad that I got to watch it with my best friend too. So I gave it a 4, I think. 4.5? I think I bumped it. I gave it a 4 and then looked at all the other movies that I gave 4s and then gave it a 4.5. So...
I'm pretty sure your experience was probably similar to Rachel's when I did a watch along with Rachel, and I was just bombarding her with texts about watch this shot, check out this. I told you and I warned you before. I said I'm gonna try my best not to talk too much during the movie.
Yeah, you barely talked at all, and I was a little disappointed.
I know. Well, I want to let you enjoy the movie.
Yeah, I feel it's different. Movies, so.
I know you do. I have to tell you to shut up when we're in the theater.
All the time.
Yeah, because you talk too loud. I don't care if you talk, but you're like, everyone should hear what I have to say.
Yes, this is very important.
No, Mushy, you're dead wrong. I've talked about this film ad nauseum. I only threw it in here because Mushy hadn't posted her rating on it on Letterboxd, so I wanted to get her to her discussion on this. This is obviously a 5 for me. Yeah. This movie means everything to me.
I just quickly
posted it. It's one of the most important movies in my life, and it was an absolute joy to watch it again, and even more fun to watch it with one of my best friends. The next movie I want to talk about is the 2024 remake of Roadhouse.
I thought you might talk about this.
Of what?
Roadhouse.
Oh.
Ex-UFC fighter Dalton takes a job as a bouncer at a Florida Keys roadhouse only to discover that this paradise is not all it seems. Spoiler alert, I'll be talking about the original Roadhouse after this one. This movie was one I was interested in when I heard that they were remaking it. Directed by Doug Liman, who has had a peak and valley career, in my opinion. For every Edge of Tomorrow that he makes, he also makes a piece of shit like Jumper.
Oh, he made Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah. He also made Swingers and Go.
Oh, he made Chaos Walking. Yeah,
exactly. He's he's got some shit on his resume, and he's got some absolute genius. So I was interested. And then when they cast Jake Gyllenhaal, because this was originally not with Doug Liman aboard, but this is originally supposed to be Ronda Rousey.
in this role. I probably would have enjoyed this more.
And then she got knocked the fuck out by Holly Holm, so they're like, no, thank you. But when Jake Gyllenhaal signed in, I'm already interested. He's incredibly inventive as an actor, and I was excited to see what he would do. Obviously, he was going to get in the same type of shape he was in Southpaw. What he did this time, from what I can gather, is he just refused to drink water. So his body was shredded the entire time. So he had like no water weight whatsoever on his body. That's why you could see every single one of his 12 abdominals. And I don't know what to call it, but the pec, the hip line,
the V
going down to his.
That is my favorite part on the male body. Just gonna point that out there.
Okay. Then have you seen this?
No.
Then
I'm
you
going
should watch.
To. That just topped the top of my watch list.
He is shirtless for about 90% of the movie.
He sure is.
You did see this, right, Jordan?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. So Jake Gyllenhaal knows the exact movie he's in, and he is easily the best part of the movie. And he is the only reason to watch this movie. Not just because he is delicious to look at, but he is actually giving a fairly enjoyable performance. Award-worthy? No. But enjoyable. On the flip side, Conor McGregor is one of the worst actors I've seen in decades.
Can you even call him an actor, though?
I wouldn't. No.
Yeah. You have to. He's in a movie.
I know.
He's acting in this movie, and he is horrible. Also, being a UFC fan, I know what Conor McGregor's voice sounds like. And the voice that comes out of his mouth in this film is not his. Or at least it's not his natural voice. Now, whatever looping they did post-production, whether I've heard rumors that they used AI to make it a little bit more... what's the word I'm looking for? Clear? I guess. I'm trying to think of, like, in my mind, I want to use the writing example, which is legible.
But, like, audibly so legible.
Yeah, whatever. He's fucking bad. And, like I said, his voice, when you see him talk, and as a fan of the UFC, when I know what his voice sounds like, and it's not his voice coming out, it's fucking weird. It's really fucking weird. Now, he does have a very thick Irish accent, so I can understand possibly the studio going, we don't know what he's saying. You gotta fix it in post.
That's exactly how I took it.
Yep. It's what it is. 100%. And it's bad. And it's horrible. And he's horrible. But as a physical performer, he's really great. His fight scenes are very well choreographed, and he does a great job in it. It's horrible for me to say. He is a fucking professional fighter, so you'd hope that he would look like a great fighter in the movie, and he does. He has a couple really great fight scenes with Jake Gyllenhaal. They're wildly entertaining. The only problem is that for some reason, Doug Liman throughout almost every fight scene decides there has to be some type of CGI in it. And you can see it. The Jake Gyllenhaal or one character will throw a punch, and the camera follows his hand, and all of a sudden the hand turns to CGI, and the body it hits turns to CGI, and then it goes back to a normal human body. It's fucking weird, and I have no idea why they did that. It's super noticeable. It made no sense to me. The camera would not stop moving constantly in every scene. There's almost like no static shots. It made no sense to me. The plot, don't get me wrong, the plot in the original Roadhouse, which I'll get to, horrible. Doesn't make sense. This is even more ludicrous. This is even more ludicrous than a late 80s action movie starring Patrick Swayze. I gave this movie a 3 because I enjoyed Jake Gyllenhaal this much.
I gave it a 2.5 because I enjoyed Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes. He is the only reason to watch this movie. His love interest makes no sense. There is zero connection. Zero.
Agreed.
No chemistry, and it makes no sense why they get together. The villain makes no sense. His whole plot, he wants to get rid of this roadhouse. Just buy it. You literally have what appears to be millions, probably close to billions, if you look at the model he has of all the land he owns. And yes, they say that he's borrowing money, but pretty sure if you offered that lady that owns it $5 million, she's not going to say no. There's no way she's making that kind of money. Or if you're as evil as you say, burn it. It's stupid. And he's an actor. I don't know his name off the top of my head, but he is one of the many enjoyable things in Game Night.
Is it Billy Magnussen? His character in Game Night. Magnussen?
Yeah. Magnussen. Fucking hilarious. He is in a different movie. In this movie. He is way over the top. He's not threatening. He's not scary. He's just a bad villain. This movie is absolute trash, and really only watch it one to see Jake Gyllenhaal be really hot and to get the, I guess for lack of a better word, crotch lines that Mushy really loves. And there's a couple really very enjoyable fight scenes. That's it. Moving on to a movie climbing my charts. That is the original Roadhouse.
What's that one about?
A bouncer hired to clean up the baddest honky-tonk in a Missouri town, armed with a black belt in karate and a PhD in philosophy, Patrick Swayze sets out to tame the Double Deuce for its owner. I'm going to circle back to the new Roadhouse for a quick moment. It's not really much of a spoiler, but the suicidal tendencies of that character made no sense to me. No sense.
Honestly, I don't remember much, and I watched it last week.
Yeah.
I've blocked a lot of it out, except for when he's pretty, and I also did enjoy Conor McGregor being absurd in that movie. That's all I remember.
The original Roadhouse is a absolute camp classic for me. It's a movie similar to you with Scooby-Doo, in that I grew up with this movie. So while this is a much different type of film than Scooby-Doo, this is a movie from my youth. And because I grew up on this movie, I'm willing to forgive a lot of the things that are wrong with this movie. And there's a lot wrong with this movie. Does that diminish my enjoyment of it? Not even the slightest. It's very similar, like I said, it's when you grow up with the movie and you enjoy it when you're younger, you find that you just continue to enjoy it as you grow older. And this is one of those for me. I think as I'm getting older, my enjoyment of the things from my youth start to grow and hold anchor even more. And what I've really started to appreciate is Patrick Swayze as an actor. He is a beautiful man. He holds the screen so well. And one of the reasons that this movie stuck out at the time for me is we're finally wrapping up the 80s in 89, where Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Van Damme ruled. This is 1 year after Bruce Willis in Die Hard, where we see a hero who actually gets hurt. We see a hero with actual flaws. And what we have here with Roadhouse, and they mention it numerous times, is that while Dalton is a complete badass, he is underestimated constantly, and it's one of the things that gives him an advantage. Everyone keeps mentioning, "I thought you'd be taller," and he just smiles and smirks. The very idea that he has a PhD in philosophy is a fun idea that he breaks it down in a great scene where he's telling all the bouncers to be nice. It's a stupid, silly 80s action film that has gratuitous nudity, over-the-top violence, 80s hair, a fucking killer soundtrack from the Jeff Healey Band, and a movie that I just absolutely adore unabashedly. I gave it a 4. I've been talking myself into a 5. Because I had so much fun on the last time I watched this, I expect this to probably get into heavy rotation on rewatches. When I want to watch something just to watch it, this is probably going to be one of my go-tos probably for the next year. I had a great time. It's currently a 4. I guarantee the next time I watch it, it'll be a 5. This movie brings me so much fucking joy. One last thing. I did mention this when I went on my Roadhouse rant in the group chat. There is a scene where his mentor slash friend shows up called Wade Garrett, and he goes out with Dalton and his girlfriend, played by Kelly Lynch, who is, by the way, a fucking smoke show. Elizabeth. They go out together, and it was one of the first times I saw a friendship, a friend with a couple. And Wade Garrett is lightly flirting with Elizabeth, but with no intention behind it. It's just the way he is, and he's not coming across as a creep. She can see that he's just playing. It's just the way the person it is. And I always kind of stuck in the back of my mind as a kid, and only recently, as I got older, I've started to realize the strength of that friendship that Dalton and Wade Garrett would have, where Wade Garrett can do this, and Dalton, there is no worry whatsoever on his face. Like, he trusts his girlfriend, and he knows that it's just the way that Wade is, and he's not doing it to try and seduce Elizabeth. It's just the playful banter. And it's always kind of stuck with me with that, where your friendship can be so tight that that's not really an issue. And I don't know why on this last watch it really, really resonated with me, but it's something I noticed, and it just made me appreciate the movie even more. The last movie I want to talk about, I went and saw in the theaters. It's a 2024 film, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Mm. That's so sad I didn't get to go. Well, I wasn't invited, but...
Oh, you didn't get my text?
Yeah, no, I must have not gone through. Weird.
Well, if you'd given Last Mohicans a 5, I would have invited you.
We hadn't watched it yet.
When the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters new and old must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. This movie's not good.
I'm shocked.
The one prior to it, I found really hit me. Really elicited some emotions from me I wasn't anticipating, as it really focused on my favorite Ghostbuster, Egon Spengler. Spoilers for Ghostbusters, what was it called, Afterlife?
Yeah, the last one.
I
think so, yeah.
Egon is dead, and the movie is about his daughter and his granddaughter, but you don't realize that they are Spenglers until maybe halfway through, maybe even a little bit later. It's pretty hinted at, and you probably pick up on it pretty quick, but it's not kind of confirmed until later. And I didn't realize how much that really meant to me until I watched that movie. And at the end of the movie, there is a moment that almost had me crying. And I didn't realize that it meant that much to me. This movie finds them back in New York, and they're all ghost busting. And this movie is a pathetic attempt to wring out the nostalgia of the very first film. And what I mean by that is that there are so many unsubtle references to the first movie with cameos and callbacks that I found it cloying. And there are lots of times where you can call back or, you know, play a nostalgia hit and it works. The Marvel movies do it all the time. The Marvel movies pay homage to the comic books. You know, they did it fairly often, actually, in the Netflix series. There's one scene where Luke Cage kind of puts on what looks like his costume from the comic books, which is a ridiculous costume. And then seeing it on real person, you realize it's ridiculous. But that's a little play to the comic book fans. In this movie, there are a lot of cameos from characters from the first film, as well as people returning that had like one or two scenes. And while that's nice, it just felt cloying, like you're desperately attempting to get them to like you. And it just didn't work for me. I didn't find the action to be that good. I truly don't remember laughing once, maybe some smiling. I can tell you that my idiot brother-in-law, Casey, did laugh quite a few times, but he's stupid. So I don't know if he listens or not, but I hope he does now.
I'm going to send it. When he posts it, I'm going to send it to him.
Perfect. Everybody else that I was there with my sister, my brother-in-law, their kids, and my daughter, and everyone else seemed to really enjoy it, but this was just not for me at all. I didn't like it. It was not good. And, I think I gave it a 2.
Oof.
Yeah, I gave it a 2.
You did, yeah.
I gave it a 2.
I wanted to watch this when it was first announced because I enjoyed Afterlife more than I thought I was going to.
So did I.
Yeah. And then I saw a bunch of shitty reviews for it, and I'm like, if it comes on a streamer, maybe. I'm not putting effort into it, though.
Yeah, this is definitely one, like, if when it hits a streamer, because it will, it's a Sony film, so that'll most likely be Netflix, I think. It's worth checking out if you're bored one night. Do not go to the theater to see this.
I will not.
I implore you.
I will watch it because I love Paul Rudd. And that's it.
He's not even that good in this.
But he's still pretty. So it'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. That wraps up what we've been watching and kind of wraps up Real Talk. So please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, which we greatly appreciate. You can also give us a rating on Spotify. You are on Spotify. Answer our weekly question. If you answer our weekly question, I promise to read your answers on air. Yeah, Mushy.
I responded. I put in an answer to a question. And you didn't read it.
When did you do that?
Just now? Yeah.
Well, that's because I'm not checking moments before we go on air. You'll have to wait till next week now. God, I hate you. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at sam_manny_movie. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, which I keep forgetting to update every week when I say this. You can also follow us on Letterboxd at manny42. And Jordan, what's yours?
J.A. Spires.
Yeah, and Mushy doesn't want anybody to follow her. She says, fuck off, everyone.
Yeah.
Yep.
You don't want to see her shitty takes anyway. So.
Hey!
That's very true. Very true.
Only kind of joking. Right.
So for... for Real Talk, I'm Manny Manuel.
I'm Jordan Spires.
And I'm Mushy Mushhead.
Adios.
Well done. It was like an hour. That's exactly how long Real Talk